Welcome to Sport Intelligence, the Canadian perspective, your all-access pass to the inner workings of Canada's vibrant sports sector. I'm your host, Paula Baker, and today we're continuing our exploration of developments in Canadian research that are laying the groundwork for a thriving sports system. As fair warning, the focus of today's episode is a topic that may cause a strong reaction for anyone who's ever watched, coached, or officiated a children's sport game. If you haven't already guessed it, today we're diving into the research on youth sport parents. For people who work or volunteer in youth sport, parents often take on the dual role of both a vital asset and a significant challenge. Parents are the ones who sign their kids up, get them to practice on time, and often spend countless hours volunteering or fundraising to help keep their kids' sport programs up and running. But parents can also be a significant source of stress for players, coaches, and others involved in youth sport programming. Tales of parents who berate coaches and referees or even threaten legal action against sport clubs over decisions they don't agree with are far too common. And as long as kids are playing sports, parents aren't going anywhere. So today we're going to talk about them, what motivates them, why they act the way they do, and how to manage them in ways that create better sport experiences for everyone involved. Joining us today is accomplished youth sport researcher, parent, and coach, Dr. Nick Holt. Dr. Holt is the University of Calgary's Dean of the Faculty of Kinesiology. After more than two decades researching youth development and parents in sport, raising a family, coaching his kids' soccer teams, and dealing with many, many parents along the way, Dr. Holt has both the research evidence and the practical knowledge to help us out. Welcome to the podcast, Nick.
Thanks, Paula. Pleasure to be here.
So since beginning your academic career, you've raised a family and you've coached your kids' soccer teams. How have you applied your research expertise to your roles as a parent and coach and vice versa?
I won't claim I've applied anything to my role as a parent.
Okay.
Like everyone else, that's been trial and error.
Okay.
I think what I tried to do as a coach, and I'm not coaching right now, but what I tried to do was help the parents in the team understand some of the evidence that is out there that can help you be a more effective youth sport parent. And, you know, while definitely there are challenges with some people, the vast majority of people are trying to do their best and trying to figure out the best way to help their kids. So we do have some evidence on the ways that you can behave that children find useful. So one of the primary things I did was try and share that information, share my thoughts about that, and just help people, give them a framework of what would be what I thought would be most helpful. And then the other thing was just try and have clear behavioral expectations of what we wanted and reinforce those standards, which is very similar to what I was doing as a coach anyway. So my view was always, I coach the kids, but the parents are part of that. Rather than trying to make them something separate and keep them on the outside, I felt we were all part of the team. It's a massive challenge because you kind of double or triple the number of people you're coaching.
Yeah.
But that's generally how I tried to approach it. So it was providing information. I found that I had a group of people who were trying to find out the best ways they could help their kids, which for sure is how the majority of parents in youth sport are approaching it.
Okay, so kind of walk me through what that would look like when you're talking about I coach the parents as well as the kids. Like, are we talking about in a full group setting? Or because I'm also curious to know, how would you have some of those conversations with parents? Because we all hear the stories of that parent or those parents. But like in general, is it something that you would start off right from the get-go of the season? Or how would that go?
Yeah, one of the things that I've done and others have done who've kind of used some of the research or just other coaches is, I mean, nearly every sport, you have a pre-season meeting with the parents.
Okay.
And many people would have been to these things, and you sit there and you go through like the logistics and the tournaments you're going to.
Okay.
And it's just kind of, it's an information dump. What I tried to do differently, I took it like a bit like I was teaching a course. So we would do activities and break them into small groups and come up with what they think their children are expecting from them during this season. One of the things that I did that I really liked, I thought was super effective, was when the kids I was coaching at the time were quite young, probably 12-year-olds.
Okay.
We actually had the kids in small groups, and they kind of brainstormed and then prioritized, just looked like a typical workshop, so how they wanted their parents to behave. And we did the same thing with the parents, split them into groups, you know, they had a scribe. And then we compared. So we said, this is what the parents thought.
I'm really curious to hear what the kids said.
Yeah, and this is what the kids wanted. Remarkably consistent.
Oh, Oh, okay.
Yeah. The kids would talk about, you know, they wanted to be on time at practice, encouraged and supported, but not yelled at. So it wasn't revolutionary, but what it did, it got people on the same page. And I think it also showed that the kids did have some thoughts about what they want their parents to do.
Absolutely.
And I've actually learned this through our research. You might not hear exactly what your parent says when you're playing. So you might not be watching them all the time, but you are definitely aware. So we found that kids can kind of pick out their own parent's voice, and they might just glance over and be like, dad doesn't look too happy right now. So very, very subtle, sometimes nonverbal things they can pick up on, even in with everything else going on. So like how you behave verbally, nonverbally can have an impact. You don't necessarily know what that impact is going to be because it's the perception of your child sometimes while they're playing. You know, it's just a super interesting environment.
Yeah, it is. So much of your research has focused on the concept of positive youth development. Can you explain what that means for listeners who may not be familiar with it?
Yeah, it's basically a strength-based approach to kind of youth psychology. So it comes from the positive psychology movement. For a long time, psychology was focused on kind of fixing problems. And positive psychology is a more of a strength-based approach.
Right.
It's about building strengths in individuals. So positive youth development is the same kind of thing. The focus is on how do we build strengths as opposed to, you know, how do we fix problems or how do we fix weaknesses in individuals. So yeah, that's really what I would describe it as, a strength-based approach. And there's something philosophical underpinning it, is this view that all kids have the ability to thrive.
Right.
They have the potential to thrive. And if we can give them the right circumstances and opportunities, which is goes back to 20 or 30 years ago line, like kids are not problems to be solved.
Right. Right. So based on your experience as a researcher, parent, coach, in what ways do parents support positive developmental experiences for their kids? And then taking that on the flip side, how do they undermine them despite their best intentions?
I think the first thing I'll say is, you know, there is no handbook. Kids are unique. The relationship between the child and the parents is unique. You know,
right.
If you've got a family with multiple kids, it could be different relationships with each child and each parent.
Oh, fair,
and the parents as a unit together. So there's not one specific handbook. I think what we've got is some general principles that seem to be useful kind of signposts, useful tools that people can use. A lot of it comes around to the ways in which you support your child's autonomy or independence. And one of the ways I like to describe it is if you just give completely free choice, kids can do whatever they want. Generally, that's not exceptionally positive. If you're incredibly controlling, and it's not just about being strict, it's about controlling everyone, every aspect of your child's life, that's
right.
Usually not very positive either. So it is somewhere in the middle.
Right.
It's important to set boundaries. And then where your kind of parenting comes in is how broadly or narrowly you set those boundaries. And these are things that there's a bit of judgment to it and art to it, but it also can change with different children and can change over time. So one of the things that we found is people might set their boundaries fairly narrowly.
What does your research tell us about the motivation of sport parents and why they might behave in ways that are viewed as disruptive or challenging for sport organizations?
Yeah, I mean, it's not straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
The why. Why do people behave in ways that might be disruptive? It's because they want the best for their kids, right? I think that's what they want. And what you've seen, there's a few different terms that describe it, but kind of like hyper-intensive approaches to parenting. So helicopter parenting, snowplow parenting, where you're trying to clear the way, those kind of things.
Yeah.
People think they're helping their kid by fighting battles for them. And sometimes that can play out as, I've got a complaint about the coach, about the sport organization, and I'm going to go and resolve this because I want the best for my kid and this is the way I see it. And that's not necessarily the best thing for the child. At some point, you do have to help them to become assertive or ask questions or whatever it might be. And sometimes the circumstances, it's not a right fit for people. So you definitely see some of these more intensive approaches to parenting, sometimes in clearing the way and wanting the best, it might be disruptive to coaches or to sport organizations or to other parents. And, you know, it's not always the right fit.
Have you had to deal with that at all as a parent slash coach yourself?
Yeah, I won't talk about the team I coached for a long time, but we had a parent who was overbearing, just excessively involved and really wanted to be in everything. And I had to kind of say, you know, we've got this, like, we'll do the coaching.
Yeah.
I wasn't able to get through to the individual. And I think it probably got a little bit worse. And ultimately, so we cut the kid. So people say, well, you cut the kid because of the mum or the dad or whoever it was. I mean, yeah, that's essentially what we did. But we made a decision for the good of everybody else. And it's a really, really harsh idea. And I know people listening to this will be like, you can't do that. That guy who does positive youth development research did that. Yeah, we did, but we tried. We just weren't able to make that connection. And these things happen. Not everyone, like, they were able to find a situation that worked better for them. And I think it benefited the group. And I tried to help find that new situation. But you can't be everything to everybody, I guess is what I'm saying.
Well, and I think that's the thing, too. Like you said, it's also an individual person, which I'm sure you obviously went through a lot of steps to try to mitigate that occurring at the end of the day. But then at the same time, they're still part of a team. So is there any differences between being an individual sport versus a team sport when it comes to parents in that capacity?
You know, sometimes I think there's a difference between individual and team sports is a little bit, it's kind of artificially inflated.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is, you give me virtually any individual sport, they compete as individuals, but they train as a team.
Correct. Yeah.
Right. So you're usually in a team. And yeah, when you go out to run a 400 meter race, you are competing on your own. But even then, you're probably accumulating points for your team. So the point I make, even in sports where people compete individually, there's still a huge social element. They're still part of a team on some levels. So it's not that different, especially at the youth level. What you see is you probably can get away with a little bit more, I would say, personalized behavior.
Correct.
If you're performing well.
Yes.
Like, so you can perform well if you're a fast swimmer. Maybe what your social skills are like might not be as important. But if you're on a soccer team and you're not really fitting in and not really following the team approach, doing your own thing, that kind of stands out. It's a little bit more difficult to integrate. So there are some subtle differences for sure. But yeah, you're in a team, you're making new friends, you're learning, meeting new people. There's other parents dealing with each other. So there's lots of similarities, in fact.
Has your research looked at the differences between individual sport parents and individual and team parents at all?
That's a good question. Not intentionally. Not like specifically. You've got an excellent idea for a study there.
You're listening to Sport Intelligence, the Canadian Perspective. I'm Paula Baker, and we're talking to Dr. Nick Holt about his research on youth development and parents in sport. So then, in your view, what is needed to promote positive relationships between sport organizations and youth sport parents?
I'll start with clubs. You know, the further you get away from where the parents are, the harder it is to have relationships.
Okay.
So coaches see parents every day. You can have relationships there. The club, the technical director and the board, who are parents, you know, they might not be seen every day, but they can certainly create the environment. Then you get to the provincial organization, a national organization, it gets harder and harder to have those direct relationships. A couple of things that I will say is being really clear on what your organization can offer. Like, what is it that we do? How do we do things? The more clarity you can have about the approach, the better, because it enables people to make informed decisions. So this is how we do our tryout process or a team selection process is. This is how many times we practice. This is how we do things. You know, okay, I can decide if this is something we want to be part of. So that information about what is unique and what is it your club does, what is unique, helps people select the right place for them. Because you are ultimately, as a parent, a paying client.
Right.
So what are the services that you're prepared to pay for? So that's part of it. And then within that, providing opportunities for engagement and feedback. I don't mean that just the volunteering that's necessary to run the club, but can you provide opportunities for meaningful input into the running of the club? And that's extremely challenging, because if you ask for input, sometimes you get input on what's best for me and what's best for my kid, right. but actually what important, how do we make it better for, or as many people as possible, if not everybody.
Okay, fair enough. So what advice, I mean, you've kind of touched on little bits and bobs, so maybe if thinking it all as one, what advice do you have for youth sport coaches, officials, organizations who are dealing with problem parents, even though they are few and far between, as you say?
And go and ask for help straight away.
What's that mean?
Oh, I've got to be able to resolve this situation. Like, you're probably not skilled in everything, in conflict resolution and mediation, all these things. So first and foremost, go and ask for help. Like, above a coach, especially a volunteer coach, will have dealt with this before.
Okay.
But I'll take a step beyond before that. It's about setting those expectations early and being quite careful when you're accepting people into the team. I used to joke, and I mean, it wasn't a joke. It was exactly what I did. While I would accept the child to be coached, I really was vetting the family.
Fair enough.
You know, but it's like when you're hiring someone, you really want someone who's going to fit in with the workplace. Like, they can be different, but they're going to have really positive attitude that they bring to work every day and all those kind of things. That's the type of team you want to build. And I didn't see a reason for it to be different.
What advice do you have for the parents of the kids about how to communicate effectively with their kids' coaches instead of getting angry or upset, my kid's not playing? Because let's face it, everybody wants to see their child play. Everybody wants to see them do well, but maybe that's not happening. How do you go approach the coach in a way that's positive and effective?
If you've signed up and you don't get to play, especially when you're young, it doesn't seem like the right thing to be happening. But okay, so I'll say this will absolutely vary, but depending on the type of issue. So I'm just kind of going to give you an example of might be lower level things, just wanting to understand stuff a little bit better. I would actually start with asking of myself as a parent, is this something I need to have a conversation with the coach, the technical director, or whoever it is, about? Do I need to do this? Do I have a chance here to try and help build their courage up a little bit and their confidence? Or can they go and ask a question? And there will be certain circumstances where that's definitely appropriate. To give you an example, maybe you got substituted off in a game and you didn't understand why. How you behave in the moment is really important. That you could turn what might be a challenging experience into something you can learn and grow from. And you might not get the outcome that you want, like more playing time. Or coach might say, actually, I made a mistake there. Yeah, I'll fix that. But I think this could be a really, really productive way of going forward. Now, there might be more serious issues about behavior. And in those cases, it is just simply a factual report to the superior. And I think you shouldn't be hesitant about doing that in any way.
I really like the answer about almost coaching your child to say, hey, maybe this is something that you need to talk to your coach about. Like, I know as an athlete, if I wasn't first string, I went up to the coach and go, what do I need to do to be first string, or what do I need to work on? And I don't know if kids necessarily feel they have the permission or have the personality type to do that. So to have a parent encourage them to take ownership of how they want to play and how they want to be on the team, I think that's so awesome. That's such a great answer.
Yeah. Well, kind of think about it. So you're probably teaching a skill that will be quite important in their adult life. And, you know, I work in a university. I can guarantee you there's 18, 19-year-olds going to have conversations with their prof or with their coach. And this is the first time they've had to do it. And now they're like legally adults. But if you've had a little dose of this along the way, you might feel a little bit more confident and be able to express yourself better, and be prepared and have your notes ready to go, you know, just little things that you might acquire over the way. If you've had that opportunity, it will probably really benefit you as a young adult. What I say is it gives you opportunities to learn things.
100%. I agree. I mean, I always try to harp on people that are anti-sport. I'm like, sport teaches you more than just how to play or do a particular skill set. It teaches you a lot of things in life that are all encompassing. So I think your example is perfect for that.
Right. It's how you process your experience and the actions of the adults around you that enable you to learn.
That's right, for sure. Yes. So then, last question for you. How can youth sport clubs leverage parents as assets for their organization? For example, as volunteers or fundraisers, etc.
Even though we use a pay-to-play model for most sports in Canada, youth sport wouldn't exist in Canada if it wasn't for parents volunteering their time, providing the financial resources, we just wouldn't have youth sport. So I'm always mindful, you know, if I'm asked a question like this, organizations already are doing this. Like, I bet you everyone is.
So then I guess overall, is there anything that I didn't cover that you'd want to include?
It's really important to me, parenting in sport, quite a lot. And it's easy to talk about the difficult situations, the handful of problem parents, because they do take up a lot of time and effort. They really do. The vast, vast majority, and I mean almost everybody involved in youth sport, is doing an incredible job in supporting their kids and creating an amazing environment. And we have heard consistently, it's in research as well, that people ask for a little bit of help and guidance. Sometimes not sure what to do. I've been a parent myself, or still a parent, but I've been a youth sport parent myself. There are times when you literally don't know what to do and you kind of think, oh, what did my parent do in this situation? Like, you just don't know. So parents can play a role there. We may not play an amazing role with those very small number of people that are problematic, but I think we have to just keep in mind, nearly everyone is there to help, to support their kids, to support other kids, to help the coaches, to help the sport organizations. And for me, that's just a really, really important component of studying parenting in youth sport.
Yeah, I think that's a really important thing to point out, because that's what you see the news stories on. You see the horrible stories. I mean, you don't hear about the awesome game that someone had and all the parents came together and lifted everybody up. It's more or less the one. So I think that's important.
I look forward to seeing the headline at a sporting event yesterday. The children had a wonderful experience. Parents made new friends and the coaches went away happy. Like, that's not going to be that. I don't think that's going to attract a headline.
But your research is important. I think you're basically giving people the tools that if these things do come up, this is how you can handle it. So in saying that, thank you so much for sharing your insights and experiences with us today. You've given our listeners a lot to think about, and I'm confident that what you've had to share has resonated especially well with the parents, coaches, and sport program administrators who are tuning in. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Oh, my pleasure, Paula. Thanks for having me.
And that's all for this episode of Sport Intelligence, the Canadian Perspective. I want to thank you for joining us as we continue to explore the inner workings of Canada's sports systems. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to subscribe. You can also connect with us on social media at @CIRC_Canada on Instagram or at @CIRCTweets on X. Stay tuned for more thought-provoking conversations with experts and leaders in Canadian sport. Talk to you soon.